Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Quick note from our friend Derwin, a loyal listener, Derwin, who actually has run movie theaters. He's a theater manager, and he said, I feel like this is a good opinion to get on what the proper etiquette for you to do, Seth, on telling people.
So when I go to a matinee and it's an empty theater, but I've selected a seat because that's the way you do it these days. I go in and I've selected a seat in the middle of the theater,
yep,
right in my favorite spot.
Sweet
and
spot,
there's somebody
yeah.
sitting in my seat or
yep.
like right next to it, to where I know they didn't select the seat right next to mine. I've always felt uncomfortable about like saying like, hey, that's my seat, because it is after all an empty theater.
Mm-hmm.
What does Derwin say?
Derwin says, all caps, say something. Most of these people have snuck in.
Oh, okay, now listen. All right, listen. I'm not, far be it from me to criticize a youngster that decides to try to see four movies in one day, like so many
yeah,
of us have.
We've all been there
in the past. But if you got the temerity to sneak into a theater and then take the best seat in the house,
yeah,
no.
Yeah,
I might actually call the manager.
Call the
you.
Derwin.
Yeah, don't be an idiot.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, like just go. If you're going to sneak into the theater, go sit up in the back row or down in the front or whatever.
Seth.
Well, not the back row, because, you know, some people select that row for a different reason. So just, yeah.
People
don't,
still
don't
do
sit
that.
Smack dab in the middle of it.
Is the back of the movie theater still a high intimacy area?
I don't know
area?
About still, but 30 years ago it was.
Yeah, no, it definitely
yeah,
was.
I would imagine it still is. Yeah,
yeah. I don't, yeah.
I don't sit back there.
That's a very good
yeah.
point. It's a very good point. All right, take a mania time.
I like to keep as little DNA as possible on my clothing.
Okay, all right.
You know,
I know. Yes. All right. Take a mania. We do this every Friday at 9 o'clock. The worst takes of the week going up against the defending champ, and the belt has been passed around quite a bit. We've had a new champ, I think, each of the last few weeks here. Ever since the long run that Angelo Cataldi had on top, talking yeah. about Andy Reid. But that's in the past. Our champion, our current champ right now, is Dallas Mavericks general manager Nico Harrison, who in his postseason, day after the playoffs ended for the Mavericks, play-in ended for the Mavericks, press conference, had this to say about not realizing how much Dallas fans loved Luka Doncic when he made the trade.
I didn't know that Luka was important to the fan base. I didn't quite know it to what level. But really, the way we looked at it is, you know, if you're putting a team on the floor that's Kyrie, Clay, PJ, Anthony Davis, and Lively, we feel that's a championship caliber team, and we would have been winning at a high level, and that would have quieted some of the outrage. And so, unfortunately, we weren't able to do that. So it just continued to, you know, go on and on.
Okay.
Horrible take, first and foremost, just because he said he didn't realize how much the fan base liked Luka,
yeah.
despite attending games all season long where the only jersey in the house is Luka.
It's a 10,000 Luka jerseys, yes.
Just a horrible, horrible take by a GM who should know better. Yes.
Yeah. And I think the second part of that was, we thought that this core, and he named all the guys, the new team, you know, with Anthony Davis, would be a championship caliber team. You made the finals last year.
Right.
With Luka on your team. Yeah.
Right. You blamed Luka for not winning the championship while also being the guy that got you there. And then you were upset that Anthony Davis wasn't available, even though he's usually not available for large chunks of the season.
Yeah,
he gets injured all the time.
Got hurt the first game as a Mav. He got hurt against the Rockets.
Yeah.
So that's the champ right now. So here are the challengers.
There's a lot of contenders this week.
The Magnificent Gladstone and his introduction of Travis Hunter to the Jacksonville media and fan base.
You know, as we sit here, Travis Hunter is a Jacksonville Jaguar, and really what comes to mind for me, right, thinking about the sport of football and really the power of the game itself, right? Its capacity to ignite belief, right? Belief in ourselves, belief in others, right? Belief in achieving what many may deem impossible. Travis Hunter, he embodies belief, right? He's a rare person. He's a rare player, but he's also a reminder that the boundaries of the game of football were built to be challenged. And so the decision to select him was actually a statement for how we plan to move, who we are, and we want him to be nothing more than him.
Oh, okay.
Because when he is, he elevates the space around him.
Okay.
From the football field to the city, to the game of football itself, Travis Hunter is who we've been hunting up.
Oh.
Couldn't be more jacked to be sitting right here beside him and introduce you all to the man of the hour.
Do you realize he led the Colorado Buffaloes to 9 wins last year?
And I hate this. I hate this because I really do like Travis Hunter, and I'm intrigued by what he might do in the NFL.
Me too.
In doing everything that a first-time coach or GM will do, which is make everything way more dramatic than it needs to be, while also piling a boatload of pressure onto Travis Hunter himself, instead of like, hey, we just want to get him in here and have him play football and whatever happens, happens. He is right now proclaiming that this young man, who hasn't even signed his contract yet, is going to change the game of football, and I'm the one who brought you here. Yes, emphatic win over Nico Harrison.
Okay, we got a new champ, and it's the Magnificent G.
For now.
Pin that man. I mean, we might have multiple champion. We might have multiple title changes today. We don't know, right?
It sounds like it feels so much like the guy that gets up and gives a big spear. You know, when you watch any fight video on the internet, the guy that's making the best ones are the ones that the guys that are getting up and puffing their chest and almost like trying to bait somebody into a fight.
Yep.
And then he gets tapped twice and he's out.
That's it.
Yeah, that's what the Magnificent Gladstone feels like.
All right, Magnificent Gladstone, the current champ. You got the strap, buddy. You're the champ.
And I say that with no ill will towards Travis Hunter. It's not your fault, Travis.
No, it's not your fault. This is a Gladstone take, not a Travis Hunter take. All right. Don't know how many of these you've heard, Seth. If this is the first time you're hearing these, then I'm excited, even if you've heard them already.
I consciously don't listen to most of the ones that I know are going to be in Tecumania. When I see it on social media or something, I'm like, nope, not going to listen to it.
Okay, good. This is Michael Irvin. Michael Irvin talking about Shedeur Sanders getting robbed of $50 million, and at the end says, shame on you, NFL.
The $50 million robbery of Shedeur Sanders. Because that's what I just witnessed. Everywhere we've seen, everything we've seen, everybody that has seen him play said he is the one or two in this draft. I love Cleveland picking this kid early on, but I can be mad at Cleveland if they played the cards and picked him up in the 5th round. But I surely would like to know how they knew he would still be there in the 5th round. I've been on that stage for years and years and years. I've never seen them position the cameras and position, give forewarning about who's about to be drafted. I wonder if Cleveland got a call from somebody in the NFL saying, we got to draft this kid. You just robbed this young man. $50 million. And it wasn't on his playing ability. Wow. Shame on you.
Okay. All right. That was way worse than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
There's so many things that were wrong in there. I know, you've been watching the NFL draft a long time, Michael Irvin. Does Michael not realize that multiple people, including those on the internet, know who the draft pick is before they announce it? Dude, what the hell are you talking about? I've never seen... What are you talking about, Michael Irvin? He's claiming that part of the collusion and conspiracy was that somehow the Browns were clued into this, that he... that. So because they had cameras on stage and what? Yeah, they knew who the pick was. The woman walking up with the pick is not the only person in all of NFL who knows who the pick is, Michael Irvin. What the hell are you talking about? The other thing, everybody, everything, everybody said that that he was a top two quarterback in the draft. That's not true at all. What happened was the people who suggested that Shedeur Sanders might better be a second round pick were loudly shouted down before the draft. And ignored. The anonymous quotes that came out about his meetings and what have you were shouted down as nothing but clickbait and a smear campaign and what have you.
Yeah.
All of the people who were saying it before the draft, including a lot of the people that do the scouting, that said, hey, in a normal draft, Shedeur might be a second rounder, but in this draft, he might be a first rounder. No, they were all shouted down. Lots and lots of people said it. So no, he was not robbed of $50 million. New champion.
New champion. Oh, this is the first time this has ever happened. Take a mania. Gladstone pinned by Irvin. We got a new champion. And by the way, Seth, purely on the numbers end of things, I'll point out the number one pick in the draft last year was Caleb Williams, number one overall. Now, I'm not even – let's say Shedeur could have gone number one. He was 4 years, $39 million. Like, if we're sitting here, like, we're just making up numbers at this point that he lost $50 million bucks. Like,
that he lost 50 and that he was a slam dunk for,
Yeah, like, he was probably a second round pick who landed in the fifth round. That's a lot of money, but it ain't $50 million bucks.
The other thing, too, like, people love to bring up Shedeur's stats as to why he was a slam dunk number one overall pick because his stats were better than Eli Manning. Let me just read you a smattering of some of the top 10 all-time leaders in single-season touchdowns, all of whom had more single-season touchdowns than Shedeur this last year. Bailey Zappe, Colt Brennan, David Klingler, go Cougs, B.J. Simmons, friend of mine, Dwayne Haskins, Brandon Doughty, Graham Harrell. Case Keenum, yes, go Cougs, an awesome
it's
dude, but not a first-round draft pick.
Yeah.
Like, I just settle the hell down with this. Like, oh, he had a season unlike any others.
Colt Brennan might be my favorite one out of all those. I don't know why. All right, Seth, I'm going to tell you right now, I know you haven't heard this one. You may want to brace yourself. This one is just a – I don't know where Luther Campbell, old Uncle Luke from Two Live Crew, had his Miami bucket hat on doing this take.
Yeah.
This is some weird comparison he makes – of LeBron James protecting Bronny and Deion protecting Shedeur. I'm just going to let's just play it.
And you motherfuckers were mad at LeBron James for protecting his son who he know can play in the NBA. You motherfuckers was mad when LeBron told y'all that his son is playing in the NBA with the Lakers. Now you see, so Prime should have took the f***ing job at Dallas so his son don't get f***ed, but he didn't do that. My. So all you sons of a bitches, call up LeBron James and issue him an apology because this is a direct parallel to what the f*** happens to celebrity kids.
I don't know what he means.
Bronny didn't. Yeah, like I give Luther Campbell a pass just because it's not a traditional sports venue and what have you. Yeah, it's just weird.
It's just weird. Because LeBron knew he could play in the NBA. No, the criticism of LeBron was Bronny does not belong in the NBA.
That he's a second round pick, which he ends up being. You know, I say I think I see where he's going with it. But yeah, he gets a pass. Michael Irvin should know better than to think that part of the conspiracy was that somehow people knew that Shedeur Sanders was the pick there.
I need someone to explain the new Luther. I don't get. So Prime should have taken a job with Dallas so he could protect Shedeur, I guess, and take a job with Dallas so he could tell Jerry to draft him. I have no idea.
And
I guess
it's not clear that he ever actually had the opportunity to take the job.
Correct.
In Dallas,
correct. Yeah. All right. So that was just a weird take. All right. So last one here, Mel Kiper. Here's Mel Kiper's take on the NFL and their ability to evaluate quarterbacks.
The NFL has been clueless for 50 years when it comes to evaluating quarterbacks. Clueless. All that, no idea what they're doing in terms of evaluating quarterback. That's proof. There's proof of that.
How many times
we know exactly what we're talking about with quarterback? They don't.
Okay, new one.
Three new pins. Kiper pins Michael Irvin. Boy, that's an interesting visual. Mel Kiper hooking the leg of Michael Irvin and pinning him. Yeah,
the one at the bar at the end where he said they don't know, we do. Like, dude, you've got so many receipts out there. Bringing yourself in there and trying to puff your chest.
Yeah.
Like, you actually have a better track record of selecting quarterbacks and that you know what you're doing. Come on, Mel Kiper. This is too much.
There will always be bad takes. So Kiper won't be champ forever. But will those last 5 seconds be for him what the last 5 seconds of Cataldi's 2 month reign as champion take was, where at the very, it's a take and you understand it and I don't agree with all of it, and then at the very end he says Andy Reid is the greatest fraud in the history of American sports.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's what that kept really him on top. Yeah. You get a strong finishing move really helps you out. So yes, that was because of that. Now I gotta say, we do a tournament at the end of the year, and there's at least three from this week's edition that you need to save for the tournament. This is a brilliant week in Take-A-Mania history. This is really good.
It was good.
And we still got one more to go.
Well, we got a bonus Mel Kiper. I don't know. Like, this is a, I don't know if this qualifies. This was a take he had before the draft when he was on Jimmy Traina of SI.com. He was on Jimmy Traina's podcast, and Jimmy Traina asked him if he thought Deion would be a negative in Shador's NFL assessment.
I'm going to make a statement, and you tell me if the statement has some validity or if it's completely ridiculous. A team may have an issue drafting Shador Sanders because they don't want to deal with the circus that is Deion Sanders.
Completely false.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why, Jimmy. Deion was a great teammate, not only a great player, greatest corner of all time, but a great teammate, great worker, prepared as hard as anybody, worked as hard as anybody, practiced as hard as anybody. Players in the NFL that played with him loved him. He went to the Major League Baseball, and all the Atlanta Brave players in the organization loved him for the work. He didn't come there. He didn't bring any circus.
Yeah. But this is him as a father.
He knows you don't want to do, he knows there's none of that going on with Shador.
I don't know. Okay, so this was from long ago.
Yeah.
I do think that somewhere along the way, Deion realized, wait a second, I'm doing more harm than good. When he went out and said that there's specific teams that we won't let him go to or we don't want him to play for, he backed off of that somewhere along the way. The biggest mistake Deion made was in thinking, and I think genuinely believing, that his son was a slam dunk top three pick.
Yep.
And then he conducted it like that's what he was. That's where, and Deion somewhere along the way realized that they'd screwed that part of it up, and he stepped back. But by then, the damage was done.
Yeah, too little, too late.
Multiple teams that, like, nope, my guys are going to change the culture. He's a top three guy. We don't want to go play for a bunch of these teams. That was a lot. I think that scared a lot of front offices about just exactly how involved Deion would be.
Yeah. So Mel Kiper kicks out of the finishing move of Mel Kiper.
Yeah.
This happened last week. Deion on Deion last week. Yeah. So Kiper. The new champ is Kiper and his notion that nobody can evaluate quarterbacks in the NFL. Yeah. That he can evaluate them better than they can.
The format was tough here, too, to this week. This was the hardest week we've had.
Because
I go back, and if I did a consolation round here, the Magnificent Gladstone and Michael Irvin would get right back up there into the finals.
They would be going for the bronze medal.
The consolation
game.
Well, or back up if they could play their way back into the championship round.
Dude, yeah, dude, I'm keeping the ones that you've told me to keep for the end of the year. We're already up. Nerds!
Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Smart Travel doesn't just cover points and miles. They break down all the financial aspects of your trip, whether that's the best days to book, how to avoid hidden fees, or which fancy travel credit cards pay off, and which ones are just an expensive flex. If you want your travel budget to work harder, then dive into the best deals, products, services, and more with Smart Travel from NerdWallet, wherever you get your podcasts.
Up to like at least 12 takes, and it's just turned, the calendar just turned May.
It's going to have to be a week of bad takes.
Yeah.
Irvin, if he hadn't said that thing about the fact that the cameras were on stage for the Sanders pick and acting like it was his experience in the NFL that tells him that, no, that's not normal. Yeah, it's not normal because this is a high marquee pick that's getting selected in the fifth round, and it's been the talk of the draft. But it is very, very normal for many, many people to already know who the pick is before it's announced.
This is going
to
be, I mean, we had Corey Alexander on Cooper Flagg's parents. We had Cataldi. We had Acho saying Shadur and Dion were going to revolutionize the NFL. How bad
That's
is
right.
that? That
yeah.
one, should we should almost work that one back in and see if it can retake the title.
They kind of did revolutionize the second day of
they
draft
did.
Broadcast.
They did.
The second
that's
and
true.
Third day.
They made it watchable. Yeah, that's true. That's true. All right. Good take, Acho. All right,
watchable is debatable. A lot of people watched. For some of us that were over on the NFL Network, it was unbearable watching all of this. Shadur. It wasn't even debate. If they had been debating Shadur Sanders on ESPN, I would have wanted to watch it.
Yep.
But it was Riddick and Mel Kiper just going on a constant rant every time a player was selected about how it wasn't Shadur that was selected.
Do anonymous executives like the NFL or like the Texans draft? Anonymous executives weighing in. How'd the Texans do according to Execanon? We'll have that for you coming up next. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. We did earlier in the show in the 6 o'clock hour, we read the assessments of the Texans draft class from anonymous executives via Mike Sando of The Athletic. This is the show in Houston, I think, that loves anonymous quotes more than any other. And
we embrace them. While others scorn them, we embrace them.
We embrace them.
Yes.
We highly recommend them. We encourage them almost. And because they were so positive about the Texans, I want to make sure that the 9 o'clock hour audience gets that sprinkle of positivity into their lives as they head into what could be a phenomenal weekend of sports here in Houston that we will also get you ready for in the final segment of the show. So let's get to this here. And we'll touch on a couple other teams here, too, because it sounds like, Seth, you just saw – did you just see an anonymous quote in this article about a player?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
for the Ravens. We'll get to that in just a second. But let's get to the Texans first and foremost here. It is very apparent here – this is me talking right now, not Mike Sando or the anonymous executive. People – it is hard to find somebody who thinks the Texans did poorly in drafting the two wide receivers that they did. People love the Jaden Higgins and Jalen Noel picks. They're getting very positive reviews. For example, this executive says the following. They have Tank Dell coming off injury, and they lost Stephon Diggs. But, man, when Dell gets healthy, adding the receivers they got, Higgins and Noel, to go with Nico Collins, wow. C.J. Stroud is going to have weapons galore, said one exec.
Yeah, the big if in that is always, hey, they both got to work out. But I think what the Texans did a really good job with in this draft is it's hard to find the previous, before the draft, anonymous quotes from scouts and executives and what have you gush about the football character of Jaden Higgins and Jalen Noel and Ariante Ursary as well. Minnesota's kind of got a history of churning out offensive linemen of like the right kind of guys. They've done a good job with that program there. So I think they very much leaned into let's be sure we get guys that are going to do things the right way. You're not going to have to teach them how to be a pro for the first 3 years of their professional career. I feel good about that part of it. And then, just strictly on the film side of things with those two receivers, there's so many – when you watch them, you can see exactly why people get excited about it. But they were both kind of those – dark horse favorites or the darlings of a lot of the draft media world in that, man, this guy's probably going to go in the second round, but he's got a lot of first round traits. And they said that both about Jaden Higgins and Jalen Noel.
Yeah.
So a lot of approval around the, now remember we also, usually this is the time of season when, after the draft, you pick all of those draft Knicks that you don't respect. But when they say something positive about
they're
draft,
your guy.
They're like, hey,
yeah.
Matt Miller, I've always thought he says exactly the right
so
thing
true.
All the time.
That is so true. Well, I will say this about the receivers, and we'll get to the other quotes here in a second, is that, there's overall hope with the team, right? There's the macro hope of, okay, the Texans hopefully take that next step and go to what D'Amico calls new heights this year, get to the AFC title game. And I've got hope that my hope direction is positive right now. But then within the roster, there's little micro hopes. You know what I mean? And like my hope with the offensive line is trending positive, but is not tremendously hopeful just because there's not a lot of sure things in there. There's a lot of faith being placed in the coaching staff and so forth there.
I just, where I have to have a little bit of a reality check myself and a micro hope is, all right, Woody Marks, man, boy.
That's a good
as a receiving back, that could help out CJ a lot. It could help out the offense a lot. And as I always caution you, man, you got to be careful with running backs because every single one of their highlight reels looks incredible. Any of the guys who got drafted, I'm watching Mike Green or I'm watching Woody Marks, and I'm like, oh, Woo!
Yeah. Yeah.
Here we go.
This kid's got something. How did he get to the fourth round?
But he was a fourth rounder.
How did he get there, Seth? I'm looking at his highlight reel. As far as the micro hope of the receiver room, it's trending much more positive for me than the offensive line room. And I think the biggest bummer out of the tail end of the year was the Tank Dell injury, without a doubt. Not just because you lost him for the end of the 2024 season and the postseason, but because you might have lost him for the upcoming season. And even when he comes back, there's a good chance he's never going to be the Tank Dell that we saw his rookie year. And that's a bummer. The drafting, particularly of Noel, because there's some similarities to their game, have made, and I hate this because I love Tank Dell, but it's actually made me forget about the angst over the Tank Dell injury a little bit. Giving me hope. I know he hasn't even practiced yet as a pro, but I'm just talking about hope. And those two guys, Higgins and Noel, as I think these executives are expressing, the Texans took a wide receiver room that was looking very Swiss cheese because of who they lost. And now all of a sudden, that plus Christian Kirk in that room now, it looks like it's back to being a strength, not a question mark on this team.
You know what I like about Jaden Higgins is that size is size and you can't coach size. He has size, but he also has a ridiculously low drop rate. He's got sure hands. So when you start talking about the 50-50 balls, yes, you've got to do it with more physical play in the NFL week in and week out. But he has very good hands, and he's shown a willingness to work on his route running. As a bigger guy, it's always more of a challenge to really get really crisp with your route running. But I think I'd be really surprised if Jaden Higgins doesn't provide something.
Yeah.
Does he end up being worth the pick and all of that? We won't know until we see it. But I think that just by virtue of size and having really good hands, you're going to get at the very least some production out of him.
Let's do one more from the Texans, and I want to hit on the particular team that you've touched on coming out of the break off air to me. But here's what they have to say about the Ursary pick, Ariante Ursary, the offensive lineman out of Minnesota. Another exec says this: they got out from under the money of Tunsil. Ursary surely is not Tunsil. He's a stiffer, taller guy who they can probably get by within their scheme with what they're going to do. They don't need a downhill physical left tackle. There's a lot in that one, Seth, that feels a little questionable to me.
Well, it's a little bit weird just in that, first of all, we don't know exactly what the scheme is going to look like. Yep. Second of all, in a lot of the ways that Ursary isn't like Laramie Tunsil, one of them is that he is a 6'6", 330-pound guy who you can envision developing into a downhill offensive tackle. He played in a scheme in college that was very outside zone run based, and he was really, for a 330-pound guy, he did a really good job with the zone blocking. I think with some of the more power type of stuff and the road grader type of stuff, he's 100% has the physical potential to do it. He's not just big. He's really, really strong. I saw John Harris on the Texans YouTube channel with Drew the other day, just talking about his squat and some of these other things. He's not a big fat dude.
No.
I don't quite understand that take by that anonymous executive.
Yeah. So we'll see how that plays out. I want to get to this Baltimore one.
The unnamed, and you don't even really need the unnamed executive in here just to point out the weirdness of it.
Yeah.
So Mike Green, the edge rusher, was taken in the second round by the Ravens. He's got two sexual assault allegations against him at this point. Allegations, we don't know the validity of them or what have you.
He's denied them, obviously. Yeah.
I thought it was interesting that John Harbaugh, who had previously declared that they have a zero tolerance policy for any kind of domestic abuse or sexual assault,
yep,
he said it's not fair to link Mike Green to Justin Tucker, the kicker who currently has 16 claims by massage therapists against him.
Yeah.
Did he unknowingly just basically say, yeah, Justin Tucker did it? Like, it's not fair to link Mike Green to Justin Tucker.
That's interesting.
Two different worlds.
That's interesting. Yeah. I haven't seen, I've only seen the exec reaction or read the exec reaction to the cut. I haven't seen the Harbaugh clip. So I'm always hesitant to comment on something I haven't heard or seen, only heard about.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting notion. He actually, when Harbaugh made that comment about them being a zero tolerance organization, it was when he was asked about Deshaun Watson back in the day in 2022. And since then, he's got a kicker whose life looks very similar to Deshaun's right now. Back when Deshaun was getting
sued.
It might
have more of a paper trail behind some of the complaints.
Yes. Yeah. So it's, if I were to give John Harbaugh the benefit of the doubt, I would say he's just trying to take heat off his new rookie than he is admitting anything with Justin Tucker.
But I would say that if I were to do, I like doing honest replies from coaches and GMs. If somebody asked him that in the press conference and he said, and he wanted to give an honest answer, we're like, look, two things. One, it's always a sliding scale. There's zero tolerance for some, a little bit of tolerance for others, depending on talent level and productivity. Two, is look, the guy's a first round talent that we got in the second round. We're taking a flyer on hopefully he didn't do this stuff, okay?
Yep.
And you know, if it turns out that he totally did it, then we're gonna then maybe we'll have to readjust.
That's the honest answer.
We saw the value might be that look, it's first round talent in the second round for a reason, and we've done our due diligence and we feel good about it.
The exec, another exec says about this Mike Green choice by the Ravens, who, by the way, was in the first round of most mock drafts and dropped all the way to 59 or whatever it was, or 57 maybe, says you can drop a guy like that into a sound culture easier than at a place that is rebuilding without leadership, which I think gets said every year about the Ravens. You know, like they're the, for all the lack of high-level winning they've done since they won the Super Bowl back in 2012, they do still get held up on a pedestal as being a place that will take guys that get passed on in the draft by all these other teams, take them and then turn them into Pro Bowlers. They do that quite a bit, no doubt.
You know, we played earlier in the week Brandon Bean, the GM of the Bills, going off on those sports radio hosts who had been criticizing the fact that they didn't get a wide receiver.
Yeah.
A couple of executives weighed in on that, and it's interesting. One guy said, reading and listening to everything that is said about your team and collecting receipts is exhausting. Let it go. In Brandon Bean's defense, he was sitting there waiting to do an interview with these guys, and he heard them saying this stuff right before he came
out. Yeah, he doesn't have a reputation for that, I don't think. You know,
no, right, yeah, I don't think so. Yeah. I don't think so.
Yeah.
Somebody else said if it was anybody but a handful of GMs, I'd say it's bad form, but he's walked the walk and he's backed it up. When you do that, you earn that. Their fan base and media are a little spoiled. Don't forget how bad it was before.
That's true. That's true. It was real bad for a long time there before Brandon Bean got there.
Yeah, and I do think the one anonymous executive probably didn't realize the circumstances.
Yeah.
That, like, he was, I mean, sometimes it happens when a guy is just sitting, like the guy's on the phone and we play the programming while the person is on hold so they can hear. So that's what
happened.
That's on the hosts themselves too for not realizing that, like, or maybe intentional.
Yeah,
that he was listening in.
Yeah, yeah. Or they're just being honest, and Brandon Bean disagrees with them. But yeah, he was.
Well, they should have anticipated it if he was sitting on hold. Like, oh, okay, like I'll give him credit. Yeah, for being honest and everything. But yeah.
I'll say just about that, and then we'll go to break here and get you ready for this weekend in Houston. I listened to like the first 6 minutes of that interview. It was pretty cordial after that. Like, nobody got really – like, the most pissed off person during that whole 6 minutes was Brandon Bean coming out of the chute in that first minute at those guys. And after that, it was kind of like a back and forth. It was fine.
I feel like sometimes Nick gets pissed at me because I'll bring up a topic or ask a question where I'm actually on his side.
Yeah.
But I think as soon as he hears the topic, he's like arguing against everything everybody else has said. But I feel like I'm taking the brunt of it. And then I don't want to interrupt them and be like, hey, no, Nick, actually, I'm like, I'm on your side here. I just let him go.
Yeah. Well, this week you're going to define need for him, right?
I am going to define drafting for need.
That's it.
Both, and I all have artificial intelligence to find it.
Okay,
well.
Good. ChatGPT, baby. Let's go.
Yeah.
We're proud to partner with the Insperity Invitational. It's at the Woodlands Country Club tournament course this weekend. It tees off today. Steven Alker, David Duval, Ernie Els, John Daly, and more. PGA Tour champions best are on the course right here in town, I would imagine, right now as we speak. Entry to the tournament is free, so if you're up in the Woodlands, you want to go check out some very famous and good golfers, go check it out. For score updates, tee times, weather notes, and more information, head to InsperityInvitational.com. We get you ready for the upcoming weekend. This has a chance to be a Friday, Saturday, Sunday clean sweep of awesomeness here in Houston. We will we'll set it up for you coming up next. All right, big weekend coming up, man. This is this has the potential to be a whole lot of fun. With the Astros and the Rockets, obviously Rockets, you got playoff basketball. It doesn't get any better than that. Game 6 tonight, 8 o'clock tip. And if you're going to split the screen, you got a little Framber Valdez action on the mound. Framber, who is, I would say, of the things that are concerning with the Astros early on, I don't know that I'm concerned about Framber yet, but other than a couple of starts You know, his first, I think it was his first start and his third start, he was good. He pitched like 6 shutout innings and 7 shutout innings. The other ones have been anywhere from kind of shaky to really shaky for Framber so far. Like, he's not been the hammer. Certainly, few have, but he hasn't been the hammer that Hunter Brown has been at the top of the rotation.
Well, this is where, as good as the Astros pitching has been, where it still feels a little bit precarious is that we don't really know what we have in Ryan Gusto. We don't really know what we have in Wisniewski. And then Blanco and Framber aren't really being the best version of themselves. And so there, it still feels like then the wheels could come off the wagon. If they come off the wagon in the wrong direction a little bit, this incredible pitching that they've gotten over the first month or so of the season doesn't do as much for you, especially if the offense doesn't get in gear.
To
an extreme degree.
Framber 1-3 with an even 4 ERA. His WHIP is okay, 1.19. It's not, you know, that's, I don't know how that stacks up to Framber.
1.2 is about So it's better than average, but it's not as
him. Yeah. You know, it's not like it's not Framber level. Framber 1.0. It's not bad. He's not awful. He's just not been. He hasn't been great yet. And this is a team that, you know, look, I know we're only a month and change into the season. This looks like a team right now that is going to be more carried by its pitching than it is its offense, if I had to guess. So now the good news is you are getting some reinforcements here. Spencer Arrighetti is going to come back pretty soon from his injury. You've been without him. And then, you know, the other thing, we get to see what Lance McCullers has in store for us on Sunday.
You know what? His WHIP is actually weak. It's at least... It's almost 1.2. He's usually about a 1.1 or a little bit above that. So it's not.
He's in the neighborhood.
He's not been way traffic, more traffic-y than he typically is.
That's good. Yeah. So he's, and I think that's reflective of my level of concern. Like, okay, not super concerned, but they're going to need a better version of Framber if they're going to do what they want to do.
The biggest thing, honestly, is ERA plus. Like, the average, it's standardized so that the average pitcher is a 100.
Yeah.
He's at a 99 right now, where typically he's in the 130s.
Yeah,
so, like, that, if you want just one single stat that kind of shows, take everything else out of it, he's not himself.
No, and some of it's the opportunity cost, too. Like, okay, well, if we held on to you and kept from trading you for premium prospects so that we get the version of you that you've been the last 4 years, you know, so there's part of that, too. You know, when he's just average, you know?
Maybe Framber, now that he's a made man in so many regards and he's been so good for so long, but now all of a sudden he finds himself in this weird year where you don't exactly know what the future is. Maybe it's as simple as that. He's just a little uncomfortable with being in this situation.
That could be, man. No, some guys respond to being in a contract year better than others. You know, you can't dismiss that.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a bad theory at all.
His sports psychologist needs to probe and get in there and find out if that is any part of the issue right now.
Yeah, man, you're here for a reason, sports psychologist guy, all right? Boy, I'm getting excited. They're showing highlights on the screen right now of the Rockets just smothering the Warriors in Game 5. Amen Thompson picking Steph Curry's pocket at midcourt. This will be a big deal. That might be the thing I'm most interested to see tonight is the Steph Curry dynamic. For whatever reason, I know the thumb has been a big topic the last 48 hours because Dylan Brooks unabashedly went after the thumb, didn't apologize for it in the postgame or anything, just said, this is basketball. Guys get injuries. This is sports, really. Guys get injuries in certain parts of their body, and within the boundaries of the rules that you can go after it, or even outside the rules if you're willing to accept the penalties, you go after those things. For whatever reason, ESPN decided to put a graphic at the bottom of the screen during Get Up where it said, Steph Curry, in parentheses, thumb, expected to play tonight.
Expected to play.
I didn't know there was a question about him playing or not tonight.
Steph has scored a combined 30 points in the last 2 games.
Yeah.
And I'll read this from the San Francisco Chronicle, because I like to go behind enemy lines, Sean.
Yes, you're the best.
The San Francisco Chronicle says this: if the Warriors lose Game 6 on Friday, we all should have seen the warning signs in Game 5. How Amen Thompson dominated Curry, how Golden State's defense wilted, how its offense sputtered amid Houston's relentless pressure.
Yep.
Those three things, I think, by and large, is what most Rockets fans, if you have to speak in generalities, limit Steph Curry the way you did in Game 5.
Yep.
The Golden State's defense just fell apart. The Rockets just keeping the pressure on and taking the fight to them. And then the big man defense, especially the big man defense for the Rockets, really making the Warriors uncomfortable, shifting back and forth between man and zone and just not letting them get a bead on how to attack the Rockets. That's all you got to do. Just do those three things. Simple.
Yeah.
It's simple.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, that's
I am joking when I say it's simple.
The San Francisco Chronicle isn't, you know, they're not breaking news as to how the Rockets are going to win this thing. It's just the Warriors didn't react to it very well at all in game five at all.
I just enjoyed the prose, the writing there. I thought it was good.
It was good.
It sounded good for the Rockets. Amen Thompson dominated Curry.
He did.
Golden State's defense wilted.
Yeah.
And then its offense sputtered amid Houston's relentless pressure.
Sputtered, wilted, dominated. Those are good verbs, man.
Oh, you cucks. Golden State, sputtered, wilted, dominated. That's our headline coming in on Monday morning if the Rockets pull off what I thought seemed impossible after game four.
Indeed. Peak Amen Thompson showing up would be a good thing again. If the first couple, you know, two and a half, three games of this series, Seth, was Amen Thompson kind of shaking off whatever rookie jitters there were about the postseason, and the version that we've got in the last two games, really, is what we're getting. That's bad news for Golden State. I would sign up right now for 75% free throw shooting tonight without knowing what's behind door number two. Door number two might be a night like they had in game five where they shot 85% or whatever it was. But it also might be what they normally do, which is in the mid-60s. You give me 75% free throw shooting tonight, and I feel good about them winning this game. There's at least one, obviously game four, and if not two, one of those other two games that they lost by 10 and 9, where there got to be margin at the end of those games that the, you know, the Warriors, all close games where they were piling on more at the end. You make some free throws and the game pressure is a little bit different during that game. And I think the Rockets win one or two of those games.
Well, game three is the one where it came down to the wire and it felt very much like, wow, the Warriors have been in this situation before. The Rockets do not look like it because the Warriors had the Rockets were down to their third option on that play by the time Şengün was driving to the rim and he pulled up
four.
Short.
Yeah, it was game four.
That was game four.
Game four.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, and pulled up short with Draymond in his face.
Yep.
Like that's where it felt like, man, if it comes down to the final minutes, you got to really show your mettle on the road and show that you've figured and learned some things out over the in your first playoff series.
No doubt at all. So we got that, and then Saturday we've got Hunter Brown. We get a Hunter Brown start on Saturday. We get a James Harden game seven. That's a big topic on TV today. Is James Harden up to snuff? Is he up to the task in a game seven? Familiar territory.
So, James Harden was really good in the game six, got him a win.
Yep.
But the Clippers fans are no strangers. They're not. It isn't new to them that James Harden wilts in games five through seven. Games five and six last year when they lost to the Mavs, he was a disaster. He was shooting like 25% from the floor.
I've forgotten about that, man. I forgot how utterly horrible he was. And then, man, Sunday, hopefully a Rockets game seven and Lance McCullers on the mound. It's a good weekend.
Look, personally, maybe this will come back to bite me, and I apologize if it does, Rockets fans. But there's a part of me that I want James Harden to have a magnificent Game 7. I'd like for him to get over this obstacle. It's the thing that's really kept him from being regarded as the player he could be if he could just if he could handle that simple obstacle of actually winning playoff series with clutch play in clutch games. That's all I'm asking. Yeah.
I would bet if I had to put up a poll, and I don't know, I'm curious to get Reggie and Luke's take on this. If I had to put up a poll about that, like, are you rooting for James Harden in this game seven? Knowing that my audience on social media is mostly Houstonians.
Yeah.
I would guess that no would win, but not by nearly as much as all the Harden haters out there would think. Like, I think they're... You pointed this out, Seth. Like, the vitriol towards Harden either seems to have subsided or it's a different type of vitriol than it is maybe towards other guys who have left or that Houston people don't like.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'd say it's long in the rearview mirror for me. And I just, now that the Rockets are back on track, I guess the wound isn't open anymore.
Yeah.
And I can kind of appreciate Harden from a distance and remember the good things. I remember the good times we had, Sean. It's like when you get to be comfortable with your ex-wife, I suppose.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I can speak to that.
You can be happy for her if she's found a new guy, as long as he's not better than you in many regards.
Oh, that's impossible. That'll never happen. So what are your Reggie, you were nodding your head along with me as I was saying some James Harden things.
Yeah,
there.
For me personally, I've been fond of James Harden, but when you were talking about the idea of the Houston contingent not being happy for him,
yeah.
I immediately took my brain back to the way that he made his exit from Houston. And I was like, I don't know that people are going to be all that forgiving of that. But I also, as I was thinking about it, I was like, I'm trying to figure, because Seth, I think you're right. There's some, for some people that has subsided, especially with the success of these baby Rockets to some degree, but I feel like there's not going to be a lot of forgiveness there. And as I was going through those two kind of polls, I was like, I don't know what it would be. So I would love to see a Pender poll.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
all
do
right.
A Pender poll.
I'll do a Pender poll today.
The ideal situation is that Harden has a great game seven, gets over, you know, kind of puts a dent in that narrative a little bit. But then at some point, the Rockets beat the Clippers in the playoffs. And they do it in four games, so James Harden doesn't even have a chance to be in those moments. And
then it's so much
it's so much easier to be magnanimous in victory. And I would say, yes, well, look, good for you, James Harden, little fella. And then I'd tussle his hair.
He would love that.
Tussle his braids. That would have to happen in the final, in the Western Conference final.
It would, yeah, because they're not meeting him next yet. It's Minnesota's who's waiting right now.
I am very much in line with you there, Seth, if for no other reason than I like the very very nice outcome.
Yeah,
I would. Now, I'd be tussling his hair as I would a toddler. It wouldn't be in that, like, in that white lady asking a black lady if she can touch her hair.
No, not that way.
I appreciate the clarification.
Yeah. We knew where you were going. Yeah. Crosstalk, by the way, sponsored by D&M Auto Leasing. What's up, Luke? Good to see you.
Yeah, hey, it's good to be here.
Yeah, man. Yeah. You.
This is another shape-shifting John Lopez, by the way.
Yeah. I'm trying to look. Brandon Scott, Luke Moore. Eventually, it just morphs back into John Lopez.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Good to see you. All right, so the question of the day.
That's right, the question of the day. Actually, in some ways, inspired by a frequent viewer of our YouTube page, Kicks Rocks.
Okay.
Yesterday was talking. I mentioned that, you know, we're about 2 weeks out from schedule release, and he's like, never really been a big fan of that. Mm. And then, you know, Kentucky Derby is this weekend as well.
Yeah.
And I was like, what thing or event are you just not in on? Do you just not rock with?
Oh, you know what? Before I get into my personal one, because I've got a very easy answer to that. The one, as far as the schedule release, by far the most annoying thing was on the first night of the draft. Was it the first night? When they went out and they announced when they're going to announce the schedule.
The first night, yeah.
And I know the pick was already in, and I was trying to ignore my feed. I wanted to learn about the picks on television, but I knew the pick was already in.
Yeah.
And they came out and they dragged it out. It looked like the Country Music Awards with the two women they brought out.
Yes.
They were just like heavily and they dragged out the announcement of when the announcement of the schedule would
be. Yeah, that made me, and I love the schedule release. It's one of my favorite days of the year. Like, I'm whoever kicks rocks in the YouTube stream.
Yeah,
I'm the opposite of Kicks Rocks. I
tell them to kick rocks.
Go live up to your name. Exactly. Yeah. So I love the schedule release. All right. I have the benefit of already knowing what this question was. So I have three things.
Okay.
On my
very
list
good
here. One is anything having to do with tennis, like when tennis creeps up.
Oh, so like Wimbledon, because that's going to be the biggest one that has to step in.
Wimbledon.
Figgy, why are you booing? You like tennis.
I know.
Yeah.
That's why I'm booing you.
Yeah, oh, okay. Yeah,
no,
yeah,
but especially if you're not a tennis fan, like they're asking you to now appreciate tennis on grass. Ooh.
I'll confine it to Wimbledon. I actually have more than three. I'll rapid fire. I'm not a huge Olympics guy.
See, that one,
I'm thankful that Luke is in for John Lopez today, because I don't think Lopez would let me leave the room without hitting me with a sock full of pennies.
I might be a close substitute, because I feel like the Olympics is like sports, but more accessible, because you don't actually have to know a ton about the sports.
No,
but that's true. Yeah, because it relieves the pressure. You're just like, you're talking about the stories. You get to brag about the Houston gymnasts, you know?
This is as a father of somebody whose daughter ran for Team USA at one point late in her high school career. I don't get into the Olympics. I'm into her stuff, but I'm not into the Olympics.
You're into being a father, but not into the Olympics.
Yeah. It's just not my deal.
It's lost a little bit of its luster because there's zero hint of amateurism anymore.
Right,
I guess
right,
that's part
right
of it. And I don't think staggering the summer and the winter, it made the Olympics feel less special.
Yeah.
It's that, okay, it's like almost you finish one, and then all of a sudden you got all the storylines for the next one coming up.
All right, the last two, the royal family. Any of you out there that are the royal family?
Good answer.
Yeah, yeah, like 100%. That's horrible. Yeah,
stop
it's un-American.
Oh,
yeah,
stop it.
It's disgusting.
And I'm not a big fan of award shows. Like the people at the Grammys and the Oscars, and they have their parties for this.
All right.
Not into that.
You're not allowed to have that take.
Why?
Because you are numero uno fan of MVP awards and stuff like that.
Right.
You love those types of awards.
No, I'm talking about the pretentiousness of the award show. It's all celebrities. It's masturbation in a room is what it is.
Yeah.
It's all there's no regular people in there. You know what I mean? It's all just people.
So the actual Oscars and everything, you don't like watching?
Not my deal, man. Yeah.
Okay.
It's just, yeah. But yeah, the Oscars. Yeah. Like,
okay.
Yeah, it's, you know what? Yes, the Oscars. Because like the ESPYs, I actually enjoy. And the sports
that
ones.
That is insane to me. Yeah. I'm sorry. I cannot hold my tongue.
The sports ones.
The ESPYs are like the worst award shows that we have ever had. Because we have the actual MVPs and stuff for them. I'm like, yeah. Why are we having these additional awards on top of the
regular
awards?
I don't go out of my way to watch it. But there's something about the Grammys and the Oscars and the Emmys that I'm just like, oh. These people, man. Like,
That's why Ricky Gervais a few years ago taking a blowtorch to everyone.
Yeah, that was the greatest monologue of all time. I'm like, yes, finally, somebody said it for 8 minutes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
I like the Oscars. My only favorite, my moment that I can't miss is when a child actor wins it, because I love seeing the people who have spent their entire lives sacrificing relationships and everything else, and are genuinely like people that are really, they've been in it and they've been waiting there for their Oscar for a long moment, and then some 11-year-old wins it and gets up, and then the 11-year-old gets up and says, "My entire life, I've never thought I could achieve it, but I did."
It's true. Yeah. The nominees are George Burns, Art Carney, and the winner is Macaulay Culkin. Yeah. All right, fellas, we have taken up too much of your time.
I think it's just enough.
Look forward to today's In the Loop. Luke Morrow in for John Lopez, Reggie Atatula, Figgy Fig. That was Crosstalk brought to you by D&M Auto Leasing. You're listening to KLT AM, KLT FM HD2, Houston and Odyssey Sports Station.